Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz coming to you from our studios here at Lambeau Field. And Wes, fans at this stage in training camp a little anxious about the PUP list, the half dozen players who did not practice at the start of training camp. At the time of the taping of this episode, we've seen one player come off PUP and being eased back into practice, and that's right guard TJ Lang.
Yeah, and TJ, he even called this too, the week before, mentioning that the plan was for him to return on Monday. He did that. Now, obviously, it's that shell work. You can't jump right directly into pads. So, I mean, there's that little bit of a holding pattern there, so to speak. But the fact that he was able to come back right at the beginning here, I thought that was a really positive sign after undergoing that offseason shoulder surgery. Always struggle with that one. Really pleased with myself that I got through it there. But yeah, the thing is about Lang, he's such a workman, and it's something that he'd been dealing with for a number of seasons now. Gradually just needed to make a change there. He did that, and now the plan is for him to come back and obviously play well now and going into, I think, his 8th or 9th year.
Yeah, I would imagine he's looking forward to hopefully getting through a season healthy. You mentioned the kind of warrior mentality that he has. He's played through a lot, not just this shoulder injury, but he's had, you know, ankle issues before and other things, really battled through some tough things. And Josh Sitton, the other guard on the offensive line, been to a couple of Pro Bowls, and the other teammates on the offensive line, I think a lot of them feel that TJ Lang is potentially right on the verge of maybe getting the Pro Bowl recognition that that Sitton has gotten on the other side. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he was certainly worthy of it last year. I thought that, in my opinion, was his best NFL season, his most complete year. Really improved, I thought, as a run blocker and some of the things he did in that area. He's always been a really stout, one of the top-of-the-line pass blockers in this league. But I thought he just had a really well-rounded season, and I was impressed with what he did. Was really impactful when they got out in the screen game last year.
That's what I was going to say, the screen game. He always seems like number 70 is out there leading the way and sometimes takes out two guys for that running back.
And it's not easy. I mean, you're looking at defensive backs, you know, linebackers, shifty players out there in the open field. It's not easy for a 310, 315, 320-pound offensive lineman to get a body on them.
Yeah.
And he's just so athletic in that way, and I thought he was a big catalyst to the things they did in the screen game. So, I think that is still something that's on the radar. But we saw this with Josh Sitton a little bit, too. In those first couple years, I mean, there was an argument to be made that he was playing at a Pro Bowl level a year or two before he actually finally got voted to one.
Yeah, and that's the way it seems to go sometimes. Yeah. The recognition comes after the player has been established at that level for a while.
You can't look at him and say, well, that's a 1,500-yard receiver. He deserves it. It's a quarterback with 120 passer rating, a running back with 1,200 rushing yards. There's no measurables like that, so it really does come down to the notoriety and having that name recognition. And I think slowly but surely TJ Lang is getting there. I think that's, we're talking about a guy that has put a lot of hard work in over these years and has been an enforcer on that offensive line. I mean, he's a guy who stands up for his teammates at every beck and call and, you know, really, I think can be an intimidating presence at times.
So. Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, in his absence thus far in training camp, Lane Taylor has taken his place, taken those reps with the starting unit. And then we've also seen J.C. Tretter working with the ones at center for Corey Linsley, who is still working his way back from the hamstring injury. So those two guys, Tretter and Taylor, they got a few starts under their belt last year and performed pretty well, especially I thought J.C. Tretter playing multiple positions. He started at center, started at left tackle in the playoff game. But those two guys, as sort of your, right now anyway, your 6th and 7th men, so to speak, on the offensive line, the experience they got last year, the starts they got under their belt, you have to feel pretty good about the depth of this unit. You don't want any guys to go down, obviously, but I think the transition to a potential backup could be even more seamless in 2016.
Well, two things, Spoff. One, we spend so much time talking about the offensive line and how this is the best offensive line in Mike McCarthy's tenure here in Green Bay. He's talked about that. Look at the depth at that position. You go back to 2012, they kept 7 offensive linemen during the final cuts. Evan Dietrich Smith, Evan Smith, and Don Barclay were the two that they kept as the extras.
Yeah.
Last year, they kept 9. I mean, there is a lot of depth here. You have 9 guys who have NFL in-game experience and 2 guys that were drafted. And another guy coming back off the practice squad.
Right.
It's amazing how deep they are at this position, how they've kind of gradually built up that depth over the last few years. And as last season showed, you need to have that position fortified. You need to have guys you can count on, you know, if somebody goes down at any of those positions. Now, they did have a benefit in Treader being able to play every spot. Taylor has really been solid when he's subbed in at guard. And Don Barkley, I thought, has put together a pretty decent camp here in this first week. So a lot of things to keep an eye on. But, yeah, I really do believe that this is the strongest 1 to 10, 11, whatever you want to look at, that they've had, at least in my time covering the team.
Yeah, and when you talk about that depth, I think one of the biggest keys is that they've reached the point where if one of the starters goes down, they're not shuffling the starters around and then filling in another spot. When a starter goes down, there's somebody to fill in that spot, and the other four guys are staying where they are, and that speaks a lot to the continuity. So
yeah, you remember, too, like T.J. Lang, when he used to have to bump out to tackle at those times. So it's a big benefit to have.
That's tough duty, and hopefully the Packers won't have to deal with that going forward. So we'll be back after the break to talk a little bit about the defensive side of the ball. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball, one player, you and I have talked about him a lot standing on the sideline watching practice, Nick Perry at outside linebacker. First year of his career, really, where he's been healthy enough to get through an entire offseason program and do the actual offseason work and not being concerned with rehabbing an injury. And he's been, in part because of that and also because of limiting the workload a little bit of veteran Julius Peppers, Nick Perry's been taking snaps in practice with the first unit opposite Clay Matthews at outside linebacker. I see a rejuvenated player, a guy who looks and talks like he's much more confident, and certainly health is the primary reason for that. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Is Nick Perry potentially headed for a double-digit sack kind of season?
You know, it would be tough to go that far right now when you look at it. I mean, obviously, Perry, I think the most he's had so far in a career is four, and it takes a lot to get that 10 echelon. It's something the Packers have only achieved twice in the last 2 years when you look at their entire defense at a single position. But the thing I really do think is he's going to be in for a career year and really be able to take everything he had this offseason and channel it into a positive season. Even Winston Moss, hearing him talk this past week at the podium, he said there's big expectations for Nick Perry this year, and a lot of it is really based around the fact that he was there for the start of the offseason program. He was able to take those reps for the first time in four NFL seasons, and now going into the regular season, I think it's something that's going to help that whole group, being able to take snaps off Peppers, being able to keep Perry healthy. There's a lot of depth there, and I think that's going to benefit all parties.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Perry when you look at his career is that for the most part, when he's been healthy and playing, he's been productive. I think he's played a total of 51 games, right, somewhere around there in his career, and he's got 18 or 18 and a half sacks. And there's a fair number of those games that he's been playing through something, whether it be a foot injury, a shoulder injury, whatever it might be. So you really wonder what this guy might be able to do if he's 100%.
I talked with Perry about this offseason, too. We look so much at that Washington game and how he played against Trent Williams. Yeah. What people tend to forget in those 2.5 sacks is he had a crab claw on his right hand. I mean, he had access to two fingers on his hand. And we saw what happened when Clay Matthews had the full club a couple years ago with the broken thumb. When you don't have full access and full range of motion, it's limiting. And there was a stretch there when he was dealing with the shoulder injury last year. I think it was 9 games where he went without a sack. But as he started to feel better with the shoulder, even though he didn't have full access of his hand, he played at an exceptional level. And it's one of the reasons you have to believe that the Packers brought him back. Seeing how he played in the big game, seeing what he was able to do on that stage, and trying to hope that now maybe he's put those troubles behind him and can really focus on a bright future.
Yeah, 3.5 sacks in the 2 playoff games last year. Is that the best stretch that the best he's played in his career, do you think?
I think so. The Baltimore game in 2013, I believe was, he was exceptional. Yep. And that was one, I think, where Matthews ended up going out with the thumb injury. I'm trying to recall exactly what happened there. But Matthews wasn't available. Perry stepped up and played unbelievably well. But in terms of when you look at a whole group back-to-back games, what those games meant, I thought those were as timely of a performance as Nick Perry's has had in his career so far.
Yeah, and we talked about the offensive line depth that the Packers have in the last segment. They have to like where they are depth-wise at outside linebacker. Matthews, Perry, Peppers, Jayrone Elliott, newcomer Laurenti McRae. You have a draft pick in Kyler Fackrell. This is a group that the coaching staff really likes what they've got at that position now.
I asked Dom Capers about this offseason, because there was a stretch there for about 2 or 3 years where they were playing a lot of undrafted free agents across from Clay Matthews. And there was something to be said for that at a time. And James Camp and the offensive line coach talked about you'd get your one guy on one side and he would be the primary pass rusher. You need to have two now.
Yeah.
And I think that was reemphasized when they brought in Perry, when they brought in Peppers, now with the conversion of Dayton Jones. You need to have options there, and I don't think the Packers are going to find themselves in that situation anytime soon. I'm not making any bold predictions for how the season's going to go, but they have a lot of guys that they can rotate in there. And again, as I said earlier, it's something that I think across the board can help the entire group stay fresh.
Yeah, and guys with different skill sets too. I mean, Nick Perry, for the most part, Nick Perry's a bull rusher. He's a strong, tough guy. Matthews is sort of the do-it-all guy. But, you know, a Dayton Jones, a Kyler Fackrell, a Jayrone Elliott, maybe more of the speed rusher off the edge, not so much the power guy, not to say that they can't bull rush on occasion if they get that. But the variety of skill sets, the variety of pass rush moves that these guys bring, when you talk about keeping them fresh and rotating them through, you can really keep offensive tackles off balance because they don't know what's coming snap after snap.
Yeah, and you're a big baseball fan, Mike. You can't have just five starting pitchers who are all right-handed. You can't have five starting pitchers that throw the same stuff. You need really differences there. You need to diversify that group. Packers have done a nice job at that. Also, to leapfrog what you said earlier, Laurenti McRae really showed a strong bull rush in the family night. I'm excited to see him play in the preseason.
Yeah, those preseason games are going to be interesting to watch, this rotation and how these guys get after the quarterback. So we'll come back after the break and talk, flip back to the offensive side of the ball for another segment. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. Wes, the story of training camp so far, if you were to pick one, and I think it's going to be a continuing story throughout training camp, is the wide receiver competition. And we've seen already in the first few padded practices a different star seemingly in every practice. Jared Aberderis late last week had a tremendous practice in the red zone, during red zone work, a bunch of touchdowns. Then the other night, Davante Adams was the star of the show, making a number of impressive catches. And this competition is just getting started. Any thoughts on where this thing is headed?
Well, like I said in the last segment about watching Laurenti McRae in the preseason, I think this is going to be a really fun preseason for Packer fans to watch, because all four quarters you're going to see some really good football from some pretty good football players at that receiving position. And again, when I look back at these last few years, I don't know if I've seen, and Randall Cobb told you the same thing, the competition, not only from 3-7 or 3-8, however you want to look at it, but from 1 all the way down, those guys are pushing Cobb too, because they have stood out. You think back to Trevor Davis and how he looked when they first came out for the start of training camp.
Yep.
Jared Aberderis making the tiptoe catch right along the back end of the end zone to get one in there. And Davante Adams was exceptional in practice on Monday night. I was so impressed by how he was able to, you know, there was a couple things in that family night game that he said afterwards he'd like to have back. He really turned the corner quickly, and there was one particular play against Quentin Rollins. It wasn't the best throw in the world from Brett Hundley, but he was able to adjust to it, got underneath it, and we saw, when you go back to all those basketball videos and the things of Davante Adams showing his athleticism, it shined on that play. He went up, got the ball, made sure to block it out from Rollins, and came up with the catch, and those are the type of plays the Packers are looking for from him this season.
Yeah, the you mentioned Jared Aberderis. He's, I think, the guy that a lot of fans wondered, you know, is he potentially going to be the odd man out? And from what I've seen so far, we don't know how many receivers the Packers are going to keep. But Jared Aberderis is a guy he's done everything he could have asked for so far at the wide receiver position. And he, along with some other guys, is going to make this a really difficult decision for the coaching staff and the personnel staff when it comes down to final cuts.
Absolutely, and Aberderis hasn't had this chance to really get a lot of these training camp reps. Last year he got injured on the first day, didn't right. return in time until the last preseason game, I believe, against New Orleans. The year before that has the knee injury. If he can string along these successes, what he's doing on the field in addition to staying healthy, I think he's going to be a tough one to beat out. And it's a tight competition. There's a lot of guys that do good things. Jeff Janis, in addition to what he presents as an offensive prospect, becoming one of the top-of-the-line gunners in this league.
Yep.
As much as we talk about the offensive side of the ball, it's going to come down to special teams as well and how these guys sort of fit into those plans. All of them have return ability. All of them can be used as coverage guys. But really, when you look at Aberderis and the skill set he possesses, the relationship he built with Aaron Rodgers last year, the kid's done everything you could possibly ask of a guy coming in here trying to make this team.
Yeah, and you mentioned Randall Cobb talking about maybe feeling a little pressure and feeling like he's being pushed. I think Randall Cobb's answered the bell. I mean,
yeah,
there's a drop or a missed route maybe here or there in practice, but no signs of slowing down or letting anybody take his spot, certainly. And we talked before about how Randall Cobb is really, really devoted, dedicated to this season and making up for what he feels was a disappointing 2015 for him.
Yeah, and Randall Cobb, when he's at his best, when he's healthy, I think is one of the top-of-the-line offensive playmakers in this league. And in terms of, I think what was the word they used a couple years ago to define Denard Robinson, offensive weapon? The Jaguars were listing him
yeah.
as the... That's Randall Cobb. You can use him in so many different ways. He's thrown a pass in a Green Bay Packers uniform. It hasn't been for 5 years, but he did throw a pass.
Yes, he did.
You can use him as a returner. You can use him in the backfield. He's really that gadget player that you can use in so many different ways. And when this offense is at its best, it's when Randall Cobb is doing those things. That's the exciting thing about the depth that they have. Whoever prevails in this competition, it's going to allow the Packers to use Randall Cobb, much like Dom Capers and Clay Matthews on the defensive side of the ball. It's going to allow Mike McCarthy to use Cobb in a variety of different ways.
Yeah, lots to watch there at the receiver position. Well, we'll be back after the break, back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, final segment here. Let's talk a little bit about the discussion that we had, the media had, with an officiating crew that was here for a few days in training camp and practice. And we found out about an interesting exchange between referee Walt Coleman and quarterback Aaron Rodgers with regards to the unabated to the quarterback rule when a play is blown dead, when a defensive lineman jumps off sides coming after the quarterback. What did you think of all that?
Well, first off, I really enjoyed Walt Coleman. Every year the NFL officials come in for one, you know, a little bit of stretch of training camp. They usually work the family night. But Walt Coleman, I found him to be really, really, I don't want to say entertaining isn't the right word, but I really enjoyed his summation of
engaging,
the rules.
For sure.
Very engaging
yeah.
individual and
yeah.
very... has a warm personality, and it was fun listening to him talk about the discussions he's had with Rodgers, because as Aaron Rodgers has stated in the past, with the Packers and the NFL kind of cracking down a little bit on those free plays right around the midpoint of last season, it's led to a lot of discussions between Rodgers and the officials, and Coleman explained to him in one particular instance that the reason they do this is for his own protection, the unabated of the quarterback. You don't want him getting hurt. And as Rodgers joked too, and he was talking with us in the locker room, let him come. Let him go. Let him see if they can get me.
Yeah.
Because he wants to try to avoid it.
And then Walt Coleman said, well, what if they do get you?
In which Rodgers just ended up laughing and
yeah.
smiling a little
yeah.
bit at that. So,
right.
But it was a big thing last year, because those first few weeks of the season, it was a big play opportunity for the Packers and this
yep.
offense. And once it went away, I think there was some natural frustration. You could see it a couple times. The Packers felt like they could have been able to get a longer playoff. Play is whistled dead. You get the 5 yards, which is good. But it also it took away some of the volatility of that offense and what they can do with 12 men on the field in particular. So it was an interesting discussion, and I thought he really did a good job of well, Coleman did, of summing up exactly what the referees are thinking in those cases.
Yeah, and I certainly expect Aaron Rodgers to continue to go after defenses, not only with the hard count, but with that 12 men on the field, the extra guys. If the defense is going to substitute and the Packers are ready to snap the ball, he's going to do that. Last year, I thought the Packers actually got away with a few free plays early in the season that maybe they shouldn't have had when the defense jumped off sides and an offensive lineman would move, and you knew it was defensive offsides, but yet the ball hadn't been snapped yet, and then when it was snapped, they let the play go.
Right.
And according to the letter of the law, if the offensive lineman moves after the defensive lineman does, it's offsides, but the whistle needs to be blown. The offensive linemen have to stay completely set. And I don't think necessarily that was happening all the time on those free plays early in the season. And then, you know, as you said, they kind of cracked down on it and took those away. But I do think that puts offensive linemen in a difficult position.
Sure.
Because they see the guy across from them jump, so you know, they want to jump and point at him and
they're
say, hey, it's offsides,
yeah, right.
You know, but if they do that, that's actually going to lead to the whistle being blown. So it's kind of a catch 22. You don't really know which is the right way to go for an O-lineman.
Yeah. And it also puts a lot of pressure too with Corey Linsley or JC Treader, who was ever in there, to make sure that they're getting the ball off quick enough. And you know, what everything's going on, and you also can't have a penalty either. Coleman mentioned that on
yep.
those plays, because then it negates everything. And
yeah, then it's just offsetting and,
right.
and it's all for naught.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things that get tabulated into it. But I thought one of the interesting things about Rodgers and what he's been able to do is he does it at such an exceptional clip. I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but nobody in the NFL comes even close quarterback-wise to be able generating as many free plays or as many of those opportunities between false starts and 12 men on the field than Rodgers does. It's exceptional. And it takes time to harness, because the offensive line has to be cognizant of it too. We saw it with Brett Hundley. He's doing a great job with his hard count, sometimes a little bit too good of a job
yeah.
with these rookie offensive linemen.
Yeah, he's getting his own offensive line to jump a little bit too much, which is getting frustrating for the head coach.
All a part of the learning process.
Yeah, that definitely, for sure. Well, that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Thanks for watching, everybody. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team and training camp on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. We'll see you next time.